Lyric opera of Orange County's Romeo et Juliet. Commentary. Romeo and Juliet is one of the most famous stories of all time. Originating from the ancient Greek tale of Pyramus and Thisbe, the melodrama of the star-crossed lovers has been adapted to stage and screen countless times in different genres. It's been the basis for numerous operas in many languages. The most famous of these operas is a French one, Romeo et Juliet by Charles Gounod. Romeo et Juliet was originally performed at the Théâtre Lyrique in Paris, France on April 27, 1867. It was 5 acts long with a libretto by Jules Barbier and Michel Caire, which held quite true to the plot and even some of the dialogue of Shakespeare's 5-act play, though translated to French. The opera was a great success, and it entered the repertoire of the opera comique in 1873, where it was performed hundreds of times during the next 14 years. Eventually, it made its way to the city's bigger opera company, the Paris Opera, where it premiered on November 28, 1888 with famous Italian soprano Adelina Patti as Juliet and renowned Polish tenor Jean Doreska as Romeo. The Paris Opera demanded the inclusion of a ballet sequence in every production, so Gounod added a wedding ballet and a large ensemble to make it a grand opera. On March 3, I saw Lyric Opera of Orange County's production of Romeo et Juliet at the Irvine Barclay Theater on the campus of the University of California, Irvine. The opera crowd in Southern California is a very small world. Although I've been studying classical singing since I was 8, I've only become involved in this world during the last year, as I've transitioned from an opera student to a professional opera singer. During that time, I may not have met everyone in the crowd, but we probably share a mutual friend. I've heard a lot about the different opera companies in the area, and one thing is certain, there are a lot of them. One of the first smaller companies in the region about which I learned was LOOC, which is only in its 5th season but is distinguishing itself by producing several operas per season. Diana Farrell, the company's president and artistic director, was kind enough to give me a press ticket to the production's single show, so I went as a reviewer for the Epoch Times. The performance. Even without the modifications made in 1873 and 1888, Romeo et Juliet is a little too grand for most regional companies to mount in its unabridged form. Even big companies, like the Metropolitan Opera, have been making cuts to keep the runtime down since the early 20th century. For the comfort of the performers and the attention spans of the audience, LOOC cut the runtime down to 2 hours, including a 20-minute intermission. I'm not intimately familiar with this opera, but I saw an unabridged production just a few months ago. It's a credit to the smoothness of looks cuts that I only noticed a couple of songs or exchanges which were missing. Nothing seemed abrupt or rushed, and nothing was absent from the story. Frère Jean, a monk of little prominence who assists Frère Laurent, was the only character who was cut. Even Benvolio, Romeo's friend who is often cut from the opera because of his small role, was included. This opera doesn't have many famous melodies, but the few which are well known were there. The show was accompanied by a small live orchestra, which used a keyboard to compensate for any missing instruments. It was sung in French with projected English and Spanish supertitles. Overall, I thought the cast was very good. I appreciated that the performers were appropriate ages for their roles, which is unfortunately rare in opera. It was especially refreshing that the titular leads looked, albeit not teenaged, young and attractive enough for their parts. I appreciate that LOOC gives opportunities to young opera singers to not only sing in the chorus, but play roles, since many of the singers in this cast are in their 20s or early 30s. Two singers who stood out to me for their vocal and acting performances were tenor Xavier Prado as Romeo and baritone Michael Segura as Mercutio. There were good and bad things about the staging. The fight at the end of Act 3, which results in Mercutio's and Tybalt's deaths, was the weakest moment. From the use of tiny prop knives to the fact that Romeo seemed completely uninvolved while his best friend was getting stabbed, it just didn't come together with the dramatic intensity needed to be believable. In addition, the English supertitles had been updated from the original swords to guns, although one of the weapons was a knife. Just using swords, according to tradition, would have made this scene much more effective. I thought the show gained momentum after the intermission, becoming stronger and more meaningful throughout the last two acts. When Juliet's wedding to Paris metamorphosed into her funeral, it was very poignant. To me, that was the turning point for the production, as it built from there to the finale. The death scene in the opera differs from most versions of the story in that Juliet awakens from her drug-induced sleep before Romeo dies, but after he has already taken poison, so they die together. The death scene was quite moving, especially Romeo's painfully realistic agony from the poison. Their voices blended so well in this heartbreaking final duet that I was almost moved to tears. Renaissance Noir. My biggest criticism of the production would be the costuming. In marketing material for this production, I'd seen the term film noir used to describe the setting. I wasn't sure whether this referred to stylistic touches, such as lighting, or an updated time period. As soon as the curtain rose, I realized that this vague movie terminology merely meant that the opera was being set in the mid-20th century. When I expressed my honest opinion to Diana Farrell that I would have preferred traditional Renaissance costumes to the modern clothing, she candidly replied, "We're broke." She explained that she too is a purist who appreciates historical settings, and she looks forward to when LOOC will have the budget for period costumes and ornate sets and backdrops, which she hopes will be very soon. This was Look's first production at the 755-seat Barclay, or any theater of that size, so the costs of renting the venue alone were substantial. Having put on some of my own small-scale shows, I appreciate how expensive it is to put on a production of this size. However, modernizing operas is a trend which is not unique to low-budget regional companies, unfortunately. The biggest U.S. companies, the Metropolitan Opera and Los Angeles Opera, make it common practice to set centuries-old operas in modern times or some time period in the last century. Although in principle I'm completely against updating an opera's setting, I'd have to respect a really authentic, relevant, well-executed updating of an opera whose story would work in some mid-century setting. For instance, a Carmen set in Prohibition-era Chicago with gangsters and their malls instead of gypsies would be amazing if it were actually accurate to the style of an early 1930s film, although I think it would be ethically wrong. However, aside from the fact that they aren't what the writers wanted, updated productions, whether at a regional company or the Met, drive me nuts because they are almost always completely inaccurate. As a Hollywood historian, I know what the 1940s fashions looked like, and Look's costumes weren't it. At best, it had a West Side Story look, with some scenes resembling mafia celebrations. Creating an authentic film noir atmosphere, with authentic 1940s costumes and sets and lighting which evoke crime dramas, would have been just as complex and expensive as an ornate Renaissance setting. I think it's a shame that giving up and using modern clothes if you don't have Rockefeller as your sponsor has become the trend. In most cases, I believe any period costumes would better create the right mood, no matter how old, cheap, or hastily made they are. I encourage opera companies to find ways to cut costuming costs without sacrificing historical accuracy. Keeping it clean. I must commend this production for avoiding an even more common trend than updated settings, which is the inclusion of indecent content in the scene of the lead couple's wedding night. Many productions of this very opera make the bedroom scene in Act 4 graphic and dirty instead of pure and beautiful. LOOC staged this scene very properly, with both actors decently clothed and reclining on a fainting couch instead of a bed. Also, the couple's kissing throughout the production was restrained and tasteful, with their lips often being blocked from the audience's view by her head. As a result, the love story seemed innocent and romantic, as it should be, instead of lustful and basic. I congratulate Lyric Opera of Orange County for bringing live performance of this magnificent art form to an important area of Southern California. I look forward to seeing how this company continues to grow next season and in the years to come, providing opportunities for talented classical performers and opera lovers to meet across the footlights at increasingly grand productions. The final show of their 2022-2023 will be La Traviata in June, which I hope to see. If you live in Orange County and are interested in seeing local live opera, I recommend that you check their website for updated information about tickets for this performance and their shows in the 2023-2024 season.